losing his life. There are so many crashes now that look way worse than what Senior's crash looked like, and people either walk away or they definitely survive. Now, Ryan didn't walk away, obviously, last night, but coming out the words non-life-threatening at this point in time, that is just huge, and that is the positive that came out of such a huge negative of Dale Sr. losing his life.
We will discuss with Jay Busby coming up at 2:30. There was news right at the beginning of the show. Drew Brees is going to come back and play for the New Orleans Saints this year, so he's back for 2020. What happens with Teddy Bridgewater, we'll see, but Drew Brees, the starting quarterback for the Saints.
Do you think he's worried at all about losing his job to Taysom Hill?
Future star.
I mean, people are talking about him, a slam dunk selection for Carolina over Cam Newton. I'm like, wait a second. Who are you talking about?
I wonder what happens with Cam Newton this offseason.
I do, too. Curious. I'm worried about that foot. What was the crazy something Blanc?
The Lisfranc.
Oh, Lisfranc. Okay, I'm thinking Mont Blanc pins, okay? yeah, so he had a pin injury. No, he had a foot injury, and I wonder where he's at in his recovery, because I just remember when Yao Ming, not the same injury, but he definitely had something wrong with his foot and lower ankle, and he just could never come back from it. So I wonder where Cam Newton is and what his future holds, because I still think that guy has a lot of winning left to do on the right team. He got to the point, there were some years there, especially after the his wide receiver, Smith, retired. I mean, it was like him against the world. Now, they had a good defense, but it was like him on offense. And then they drafted Christian McCaffrey, but it's never materialized into the playoff wins that they want.
No, since that run to the Super Bowl several years ago when he had an MVP season, they've not been able to get back to those level results. And he's dealt with not only the foot issue, but the shoulder injury from the year before where he needed surgery there. So what happens with Cam Newton? What happens with Phillip Rivers? Teddy Bridgewater, mentioned him. He could be a starting quarterback somewhere else, Jameis Winston. And then the big one would be biggest, because the others are big, would be Tom Brady. The speculation continues around him, and he will have an effect on the quarterback market. If he were to leave New England, well, one, New England needs a quarterback. He would be taking up a spot somewhere else, Las Vegas. And then
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, then we'll see what happens from there. Now, Tom, with a message to the haters out there, to those questioning how much does he really have left in the tank on social media. One, selling shirts for TB12, not going to fight the hustle. But also, he had captions with it. And here's what Tom Brady wrote on his social media. Go ahead and bet against me. Prove him wrong or prove him right, and you think you've seen the best of me. Don't worry, I won't make you apologize. Season 21 countdown, I'm grateful for you doubting me, and I'm determined to prove you wrong again.
And then also, one of the pictures, I don't know if it was in that same post or maybe a later post, got Giselle in the workout gear. Yeah. To sell said TB12 method gear. Yeah. I think that everything around Tom Brady this year is going to be fuel for him. I do think he wants to prove the naysayers wrong. He wants to leave no doubts that he's the best. Is that with the Patriots? Is that his best option, or would that be somewhere else?
It's one of the biggest storylines out there in sports, though, for obvious reasons.
Do we know about Tom Brady before or after the draft?
Oh, before.
Okay.
I would think we learn
March is March
within
our
a reasonable
month?
Time when free agency opens in about a month.
Okay. So March will be the month.
Yeah. Do you think he has a good idea of what he's actually going to do, though? Is the shoulder shrug emoji, is that really the truth?
I do think it.
That's what he sent to Ben Affleck and Matt Damon when they asked him.
I think he is playing us all for fools. Much like the Hulu Super Bowl commercial, he knew that was very contrived. Yeah, he totally got you too.
No.
You've been on it too. Oh,
I didn't.
Stop. You're the one that brought it up first. He knows what he's doing. I think he's got a great marketing plan. I'm sure he's got an incredible team around him that's helping him through every step of this, including his agent. And I honestly do think we're making this big hubbub, and at the end of the day, he's going to be right back with New England and right back in the Super Bowl hunt in 2020.
Yeah, you know what a good landing spot for him would be? The New England Patriots.
Great defense.
Yeah.
They've got to do some work, though. And Bill Belichick should just let somebody else draft the wide receivers this year. Just let somebody else do it. You're not so good.
Yeah, he's done a fine job putting that roster together over the years, not at that position through the draft.
His wide receiver is like kryptonite to Superman. Him drafting wide receivers, that's his kryptonite.
What do you think
about one flaw?
What do you think about Juwan for the Patriots?
That would be awesome.
In the Patriot way?
That would be awesome. I know one thing. Tom Brady would like playing with him because of how fired up Juwan gets. I could see that. That would be awesome. Maybe also draft a speedier guy, too. You need a little more speed, too.
You got Callaway. I'm really curious to see what Callaway runs. Marquez Callaway.
Yeah, at the combine?
Yeah,
it's going to be interesting. I'm just anxious to see what everybody does that's been invited, what they're going to do there, because I still think it just stinks that Nigel Warrior didn't get like that invitation, because that could have really been a good catalyst for him. I think he'll have a great pro day here at Tennessee. But out of all the guys that are going to be there, you think Taylor has the best showing?
Well, he's not going to be working out at the combine.
That's right. He's not, because he's coming out of that knee surgery.
Shin surgery. Mentioned that when he was on with us last week on Sports 180. But
that stinks, too, because he's such a great athlete.
Yeah, I would say for their positions, their numbers will be different, but for their positions, Callaway and Domwood Anderson, I think will show up the best.
Okay.
I don't think Juwan's going to impress NFL teams through his times or his numbers. I think it'll be with his film, the way he plays the game, and just look at what he did as a senior at Tennessee. His ability to line up in different spots. I think that's how he's going to impress NFL teams.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right.
Football.
Yes, what they should be graded on more so than running in a straight line.
And Juwan's going to have to answer questions about his off-the-field issues that he's dealt with, and then NFL teams will be questioning his medical evaluations. He's dealt with injuries during his time at Tennessee.
Yeah, and if, you know, I don't worry too much because I don't think he's a borderline guy. If he was more borderline, say his size wasn't as good as it is, he didn't have as many catches, I would worry more about the off-field stuff. But when you look at what goes on in the NFL and even what some people do in college before they get to the NFL and they're fine, like a Tyrann Mathieu, like nobody thought that was going to work out. Juwan's not a borderline guy. I think he definitely gets drafted and I think he's just going to wow. So I'm not really worried about the off field. Yeah, he's going to have to answer questions. I think you're totally right about that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a lot of it can be explained away. I was kind of an irrational, emotional teenager / early 20s guy, and I wore my heart on my sleeve, and I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I think he'll probably do a pretty good job of answering. It's just that NFL teams are going to wonder about that. They always do, and they should. They should look into it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he whether he should have been or not, he was dismissed from the team. So NFL teams are going to ask what happened there when you were dismissed from the team.
Juwan, you have my full permission to throw Brady Hoke right under the bus, run over him a couple of times in it.
Yeah, see, I argued that differently. I think that was good for him because he obviously was going through some stuff. I think the wake-up call of being away and then having another chance through Jeremy Pruitt. Now, I would not have kicked him off the team. I would have suspended him indefinitely.
Indefinitely. I will go with you there, yes.
But if he needed to be suspended indefinitely, that means that he needed to make some changes. So in the end, it worked out for Juwan. So yeah. I know how people feel about Brady Hoke. And I would not have kicked him off the team. I also, looking at the results, can't say that didn't help him.
Yeah, I want to clarify. I wasn't saying like Juwan should have just been left alone to do whatever he wanted to do. No, he needed to face some sort of punishment. Yeah. I just thought it was very much overstepping your boundaries when Brady Hoke kicked him off the team.
We will come back here on Sports 180. A little more Tennessee basketball. The Vols in action tonight against Vanderbilt. Got to get a win tonight at home against the Commodores. We'll talk about what happened last night in the Daytona 500 with Jay Busby coming up at 2:30. We are with you until 3 o'clock this afternoon. That's when Sports Talk will begin on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal. Welcome back into Sports 180. About a little giveaway time, Heather Harrington.
How about it? Jason Aldean going to be in Knoxville this weekend. We want to send two people there.
Caller number 2 to 656-WIN, 656-9467. Win a couple of tickets to see Jason Aldean coming to Knoxville this upcoming weekend. Joel Silverberg standing by. He'll get you set up. Caller number 2 to 656-WINS wins 2 tickets to see Jason Aldean.
You could be chilling in Thompson Bowling Arena instead of on that dirt road. So there you go.
Very well played, Heather Harrington.
I'm learning from the best. That is you, Josh.
Why? I think we're getting better here, but why are we still, at times, it seems, tell me if I'm wrong here, struggling to just watch somebody play football or watch somebody play basketball and say, you know what? I think that guy can play. It goes to, we'll see how it plays out with Juwan. Maybe he goes really high in the draft, maybe not. I think he's probably a mid-round pick, which is maybe more appropriate. Don't roll my eyes when I, or roll your eyes when I make my somewhat comparison here. Cam Phillips of the Houston Roughnecks. He's in the XFL. He is balling in the XFL.
All right.
He was a really good player at Virginia Tech. His last two seasons, he had 70-plus catches each season. First two games in the XFL, he's been terrific. Now, he doesn't have quite the same level of size. I think he's like 6 foot. You can make, I mean, that's fine. 6 foot, 205 in the NFL. You can make plays there. But his 40 time wasn't very good. But he gets open, and he makes plays, and he can catch the football. He's a guy that I would look in the next year to get an opportunity in the NFL. But you watch him play, goes out and makes plays. I think that applies to Juwan in this conversation, too.
You have to put a little asterisk on Phillips, though, because he's not playing up against NFL-caliber defenses. So we'll see. We'll see what the learning curve is, and I agree with you. I think that could be one of the guys out of a handful, possibly even more than 10, that do get a shot on an opening NFL roster, or at least a camp roster, to see what they have. Juwan having such great size. The reason why we always have to talk it to nauseam and we don't know is because there's misses, right? Tim Tebow being a miss in the pros, that's still a surprise. You didn't think he, I know he has the playoff win against the Steelers. I get it. He was still a bust, right?
If yeah, sure. As a first round pick. Yeah. I thought teams should have kept him as a backup quarterback, but obviously they did not.
Yeah. So, and maybe that was to him. Like, if he wasn't going to start, he wasn't going to waste his time. I don't know if he had a say so in that or not. But
yeah, had a couple of shots with the Eagles and the Patriots, and they decided to move on. So that's worth noting.
Okay. But as far as Juwan is concerned, I remember the same sort of conversation being out there around A.J. Johnson, where he was a really good player for Tennessee. I know how everything ended. Let's just focus on the football part.
Right.
People were saying, well, he, you know, maybe he could be a third round draft pick. But we don't know how his game translates. He's a little slow, this and that. And after sitting out for an extended period of time, he was rated as one of the highest pro football focuses defensive players in the league this past season. So there's just always going to be misses, whether you miss a guy and maybe you get you get him at a lower round and he proves that he's better than that, or you draft somebody really high and they just never reach that potential. I just think that's the reason we talk it to death, is because there are some guys that just don't fit the mold and end up being huge successes.
And I do think times are changing a little bit in this conversation. Remember last year with the draft, DK Metcalf went out and put up huge numbers, the combine, and wowed everybody. And at the time, I think a lot of people thought, well, he's going to go too high now in the draft. And it turns out he ended up being a steal for the Seahawks, because he was more well-rounded as a receiver than I think people, myself included, wanted to give him credit for. Plus the measurables, at times he was, you know, he was an impossible cover for some corners. So,
and now he just looks like a freak, man. I mean,
so the reaction almost went too far the other way with Metcalf when he left Ole Miss. A lot of people now are pointing out, how did that team not do more when you have Metcalf, A.J. Brown, Dawson Knox, Tiamu at quarterback? And the offense actually did pretty well, but still, Metcalf maybe swung the conversation back the other way. Maybe we can find somewhere in the middle. Well, if they have the numbers and you think you can actually see something on film, go take him in the draft.
Yeah, and the best thing about it is, and I think me and you, we see this the same way, and correct me if I'm wrong, you can take flyers now. It's not just going to kill you to draft the wrong person with your first round draft pick. Like it used to. I mean,
well, it depends on who you are.
You still think it's just absolutely detrimental. I mean, I guess if there's just a huge bust, but it didn't even really hurt the Cardinals getting Rosen. Right?
Well, they still have some work to do too. But yeah, I mean, yeah, they went out and got a quarterback the next year.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
It's just not going to set you back for the amount of time that it used to set you back. Like when you were saddled with a huge contract for a Sam Bradford. I mean, you were saddled with that. You couldn't really alleviate that pressure.
Yeah, that is a little different.
Yeah.
Now, also, they did fire the coach after year one with Josh Rosen. And some argued they should have with the GM. So it does depend on who you are. But you're not wrong. I mean, I've expressed my opinion, hey, take a quarterback, even if you don't need one, because if you think he's going to be really good, he can still be an asset for your team as a backup or as a guy that will battle for the starting position or as a trade piece.
If Joe Burrow goes number one, which all signs are indicating that at this point in time, would you trade up to take Tua at number two? Because I think I still would. I would give up something to get him because I still think he's a game changer, franchise changer.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah. Assuming the medical stuff you're fine with, yeah, I'd go get Tua.
I cannot wait to see how this draft plays out.
Yeah, very interesting year, because we were talking about the free agency aspect, or trade aspect, I guess, with quarterbacks. But when you factor in the draft as well, a few guys that are very well thought of, you could have three quarterbacks in the top 10. Factor those in, they'll be cheaper than some of these guys that you would have to go sign. NFL teams have to weigh that as well.
One of the projections, and I it really breaks my heart thinking about two of the most exciting quarterbacks that I've seen in the last 10 years could go to just absolutely crap teams, and their careers might be wasted, or at least the first portion. One of the mocks that I saw.
Who are you talking about here?
Joe Burrow going to Cincinnati.
Okay.
Chase Young would go number two to Washington, and then Tua would go number three to Detroit. And I was like, I mean, that breaks my
and
heart.
And Stafford gets moved.
I guess so. Yeah. So that was just one of the mocks that I saw on Twitter today. And I was just like, I don't want that for them. I know that Tua is a rammer jammer and I'm not supposed to like him, but I really like him and I don't want to see his career play out in Detroit.
Man, Detroit.
I mean, you talk about rough town. Ugh, that would just, he needs to pull an Eli Manning if that happens. I'm not playing for you. Nope.
I probably would do the same. Vegas sounds much, much better. We will come back. Jay Busby, Yahoo Sports, a scary situation last night at the Daytona 500. He wrote about it for Yahoo this morning. He'll join us to talk about it coming up next right here on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal. Welcome back into Sports 180. Thank you for being with us today. Rain continues to pour here in East Tennessee. Be safe as you drive around today. We're here for another half hour. Sports Talk will take over coming up at 3 o'clock. And you hear the rearview mirror there from Pearl Jam. Means it's time to talk to Jay Busby, who joins us on the Stanley Fencing Gates Hotline. Joins us each week from Yahoo Sports. Jay, we appreciate the time as always. And you wrote about what happened last night in the Daytona 500 at the end with Ryan Newman's crash. And 19 years ago today is actually when we lost Dale Earnhardt in Daytona. But the connection there, safety just so much better. But just what came to mind when you were watching that and got the news and all of that from a scary situation last night?
Yeah, I was out. You know, I don't cover as much NASCAR anymore on a day-to-day basis. So I was out having a beer with my brother at a local sports bar. We're watching it, and then we see that wreck, and then all of a sudden my phone starts blowing up, and I had to say, you know what, I got to go to work because this looked really, really bad. I mean, you know, we've all been watching. Anyone who's watched NASCAR for any length of time knows what a bad wreck looks like, and there's a feeling that you get in the pit of your stomach, particularly when they start doing slow motion replays, and you look for, you know where the driver is, and you look for impact there, and we saw that last night, and that was just, it was sickening. There's no other word about to best describe it. It was just a sickening feeling.
I think we have to correlate Dale Sr.'s passing to the news that we got today about Ryan Newman. He's not in the clear, but the injuries that he sustained were non-life-threatening. And without Dale Sr.'s just untimely death and tragic death, I don't know if we have as many guys walking away from crashes and surviving crashes without that happening.
We absolutely don't. I mean, that's the tragedy of this. You know, I wrote a book on this a couple of years ago about Earnhardt, and in one of the chapters, I went deep into all the safety innovations that came about in the wake of his death. And also, I kind of broke down a number of the different drivers who had been in huge wrecks since his passing, and literally almost every single big-name driver – Jeff Gordon, Jimmy Johnson, Kyle Busch, Carl Edwards, all of these guys have all been in these wrecks. Now Ryan Newman have been in these monstrous wrecks that if they had been in a car with the safety levels of Earnhardt's, they would be dead. I mean, there's just, you know, there's no other way to say it other than that starkly. They would be dead. And so, yeah, I mean, it's a terrible tragedy what happened to Earnhardt, but it's the classic case of if something good could come of it, it's that it forced NASCAR to get whatever safety measures were on the drawing board, get them implemented and out there on the track as fast as possible.
We're talking to Jay Busby with Yahoo Sports. The name of the book he's talking about, Earnhardt Nation, the Full Throttle Saga of NASCAR's First Family. And it's clear to say that NASCAR did take safety very seriously. I don't know about the exact timeline, but because of Dale Earnhardt and his impact and knowing what could happen from there, NASCAR, to its credit, took it very seriously, and it's saved lives since then.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was not in any way trying to imply that NASCAR didn't take safety seriously. It's just that they didn't know. You know, they didn't know, and there were so many different ways. I mean, Earnhardt's situation was so unique in the sense that if he had hit that wall a degree or two, a few degrees other than the degree that he hit it, he would have just skidded along the wall and would have been fine. But just everything lined up perfectly horribly. And there's always been kind of a tendency for human beings in any situation to get complacent. And safety in NASCAR is no exception to that, where just because something hasn't happened for a long time doesn't mean it can't happen. And so I think that this is going to spur people, particularly now, to take a closer look at what can be done to make NASCAR cars even safer that are when they're on these super speedways.
Do you think this was kind of worst case scenario for the big race to kick off the season? Because you not only had a rain delay, which forced them to finish on Monday, but then ending in such a tragic way where even the celebrations on in Victory Lane had to be, you know, very muffled once they found out the severity of the accident. It seemed like this was definitely not the way you wanted your season to start.
No, certainly not. But I think that's probably low on the list of concerns, because NASCAR right now has to figure a way to just hold on to what it's got. It's got to figure a way to appeal to its existing fan base. And I think what we saw last night, I mean, what I saw, I know, on Twitter, was that there was a huge outpouring of people who are still dedicated NASCAR fans. They just like the sport. They may not be hardcores. They may not be following every driver, every lap, but they like the sport. There's still a huge percentage of people out there, sports fans, that enjoy keeping up with NASCAR. And what the sport has to do is figure a way to continue to appeal to those people. And, you know, I'm not sure that necessarily this was going to tip the scales one way or another. You know, we're going to Las Vegas next weekend and then onward from there, a West Coast swing. So hopefully NASCAR can regain a bit of positive momentum. But, yeah, certainly, to your point, not the way that you want to start out a season.
Yeah, I did wonder, Jay, as obviously Ryan Newman is the main story and deserves the attention. I was curious what you thought of the race itself, what you saw up until that happened.
It was a mess. I mean, it was a freaking mess. There's no other way to put it. I think that they are still trying to figure out exactly how these new cars work with their setups and the spoilers and so forth. I mean, there was wrecking all over the place to a degree that we have not seen in quite some time. So, yeah, I'm hopeful that going forward, there'll be a little bit more focus on precision racing, a little bit less on just slamming through bumpers and trying to get to the finish line in one piece. But, yeah, I mean, Denny Hamlin, the guy's an absolute master. As my colleague Nick Bromberg wrote today, he's a Hall of Famer already, no matter what. 3 Daytona 500 wins. He hasn't won a championship yet, but the guy's a master at Daytona, and he deserves plenty of credit. I mean, it was right place, right time, but you got to get yourself in the right place too.
Who do you see maybe, or who's a driver that you would bet on to win the championship after seeing how everything shook out after the Daytona 500?
I mean, it's tough. The problem with Daytona is that you really can't get a feel for any sort of driver, in the sense that it's so much of a lottery. You know, Kyle Busch, best driver of his generation, and he gets taken out yet again. He's getting into that Dale Earnhardt, when are you going to win Daytona conversation. Brad Keselowski, same thing. Martin Truex, same thing. These guys are all guys that are immensely talented, but you can't judge how they're going to run all season from Daytona. You can almost take the Daytona's results and throw them out. I think that we'll start to get a little bit better sense going forward. But the guys that can adapt the fastest are always the guys that end up at the top of the end. And those guys that I mentioned are among the best at adapting to changing situations.
Jay Busby, Yahoo Sports, is with us. Jay, before you go, switching sports, there is a saying in NASCAR that I know you've heard: if you're not cheating, you're not trying. Well, if that's applied to baseball, the Astros have tried really hard, it seems, over the last few years. You wrote about them. What do you think heading into the 2020 baseball season, with everything that's still going on with the conversation around the Houston Astros and Major League Baseball?
Well, it's made baseball more interesting than it has been in decades. I mean, or at least years. People actually have someone to root against now. But I mean, I think that what's going to be fun is, I think fans need to be very careful about getting up on that soapbox, getting up on that mountaintop and decreeing that the Astros are the only ones that are doing this, because, you know, much like SEC football, while everybody else may be cheating, your own team's hands are not quite so innocent either. So I think we're going to find out a lot more. I think that it's going to get a lot worse before it gets better. But it makes baseball that much more fun.
Jay, what should I tell my dad, who is a lifelong Houston Astros fan, about wearing his championship hat and shirt? He is very nervous. He doesn't want to get heckled. He's a fly-under-the-radar guy. But he's really distraught, Jay.
I get that. I mean, I suppose my advice would be to kind of maybe keep it on the down low. Either that or, just lean into it and just walk around banging on a trash can wherever you go. You know, tell him that, to just lean into it. But, yeah, if he's a below-the-radar guy, he might want to keep that one in the closet for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, why not just go WWE heel and just take on all comers? Stand in the middle of that ring.
Absolutely. Absolutely. My colleague proposed that, and I said, you know, they need to wear their World Series championship rings right up to the plate, show them off to the catcher, you know? I mean, just go all the way in.
If Hulk Hogan can do it, if he can turn heel, then Astros, they started off really great with their sorry, not sorry apology.
Amen. Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, it's tricky to pull that off because you got to have zero shame, and most people tend to get a little bit, feel a little bit ashamed once they get, once they feel a little bit of blowback. But, you know, if the Astros can hold on to it, more power to them.
Yeah. Now, you have called for opposing fans to boo them still this year, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Yeah, just boo your lungs out. Go for it. Yeah. Have fun with it because, I mean, it's rare that baseball has a true enemy anymore. But we can all unite behind this one, except for your dad. I'm sorry.
Yeah, he's included. Nick Markakis getting in on it today down there in Atlanta. Read Jay Busby's work, Yahoo Sports. We tweeted out a link to what he wrote about with the crash involving Ryan Newman last night, and mentioned his book as well. You can check it out, Earnhardt Nation, the Full Throttle Saga of NASCAR's First Family. Hey, Jay, we really appreciate the time today. Thanks for it, and we'll talk to you again here soon.
I look forward to it. Take care.
Jay Busby every Tuesday right here on Sports 180. He joins us as all guests do on the Stanley Fence and Gates Hotline.
Love talking to Jay. I will pass along the information to my dad that he, I think you just wear it. I think you just, it is what it is. No revisionist history here. You won the World Series, wear the championship shirt.
Man.
Might have to put up with people talking stuff to you.
Astros against the Yankees. You're going to have people pulling for the Yankees now, aren't you?
I think you're right. And Bill Simmons asked, Houston is just getting pooped on. Like, much like Knoxville's just getting poured on right now in rain, Houston's just getting it from all sides because Bill asked Russillo, who's worse for their sport, the Houston Astros or the Houston Rockets?
No, they're not big Rockets guys.
They hate the Rockets.
What if they changed their name to the Houston Astriscos?
Houston Astros. Still got the hardware.
Yeah, still get to keep the metal, as Ron Manfred described it. That's all it is. Just
a piece of metal.
Yeah.
Just a hunk.
Yeah, it wouldn't be a penalty to take it away. Yeah. Final segment, Sports 180 Powerball, driven by Ted Russell Ford. That's next. And then Sports Talk at 3 o'clock here on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal. Back for the final segment of Sports 180. Thanks for being with us today. A little college football news. This is actually one to get excited about, and you don't have to wait 10 years to see it.
Yeah.
In 2021, September 4th, Georgia and Clemson are going to play in Charlotte. So two teams that I'm guessing will be highly ranked playing in 2021. Georgia's Power 5 out of conference games over the next few years. They have two scheduled every year. Because they play Georgia Tech every year and then playing another one. So Virginia this upcoming year, not as tough of an opponent, although they had a good season, went to the ACC title game. 2021, Clemson. 2022, Oregon. 2023, Georgia will play Oklahoma. 2024, Clemson again. And then UCLA in 2025 and 26. I could keep going, but you're not going to remember. Florida State, Texas, Clemson, Ohio State. Pretty impressive list.
That is really awesome, and kudos to both of those teams, because don't forget, Clemson also plays South Carolina, which is an SEC team, so playing two SEC teams in 2021. I give them all the credit. These teams that aren't scared to really play a meaty opponent, give their fans something to watch. I wish it was a home and home. I have been in the past very in favor of neutral site games. I think they have their place. I think they're cool, but when that's your biggest marquee non-conference game of the year, and then you're playing Charlotte and East Carolina and whoever else as your home games, I do think the fans deserve better on campus, but I think this is just awesome for college football in general. What a matchup.
Yeah, so Georgia's playing 10 Power 5 opponents every year, and 11 pops up because they keep winning the East. Tennessee and Florida are going to try to change that, of course, in the next couple of years. But, yeah, Clemson, Georgia, September 4th, 2021.
Bring it on. Are you ready for football yet?
I've been ready the last 2 weeks watching XFL games. People think I'm probably joking, too. I'm watching these games.
No, you're rattling off these names. You really know these players. We know you're watching. Yes.
P.J. Walker, easy early season MVP choice, but Cam Phillips, his number one target, has been really good. Three touchdowns the other day. John Wilkerson, hello.
Hello. Goodness, you could be talking about English Premier League soccer players as far as I'm concerned. I would know them just as well, with the exception of a few notables that I've actually seen play before with the XFL versus the EPL.
It was pretty wild in the Renegades game the other day. There's this guy named Lionel Messi who had a really big return.
I've heard that name before.
Yeah, worlds are colliding now.
I think he worked through a couple of training camps with a couple of teams in the AFC West. Just couldn't hack it, so he wound up in the XFL.
I can think of a couple of teams that could probably use him.
That's right.
If we're going to be honest.
That we are.
Yeah. Before we hit the power poll, John, Ben Affleck today was on ESPN. He said that he and Matt Damon asked Tom Brady directly, what are you going to do? Are you going to stay or are you going to go? And he sent back a shoulder shrug emoji. This was via text.
Uh-huh. Well, I guess they're the sources then.
Sure.
Yeah, Ben Affleck, he was on First Take this morning. Plugging it.
And Drew Brees is coming back, playing in 2020.
That's great to see.
Yeah.
I think there's one more run left in him at least, and just hate the way that it ended for him last year.
And I'm sure he didn't want it to end that way.
Sure enough. So I think that it is going to be fun to watch, and we'll see whether or not this is the last ride for him.
John Wilkerson getting ready for Sports Talk in just a few minutes. Before that, let's hit today's power poll.
Captain, we're losing power in the warp engine.
Nuclear power pants.
What's up? I'm Kenny Powers.
You don't know the power of the dark side.
I have the power!
With great power comes great responsibility.
Full power, Mr. Scott.
The Power Pole, driven by Ted Russell Ford. Two locations to serve you, Kingston Pike and Parkside Drive.
So Heather, today is National Wine Day, right?
National Wine Day. Yeah, I actually celebrated yesterday.
Yeah.
So
and the day
not,
before.
Yeah. Probably not going to be celebrating too much today, well, but yeah, I'm excited.
Last night was probably a big wine night, Bachelor. It was
a big
SEC matchup. Hannah Ann of Knoxville and Madison of Auburn. Bruce Pearl was on the show, both representing.
Yeah.
Both on to the round of, I don't know what round it is, but the three finalists, you have an ACC representative and Victoria F. from Virginia Beach.
And just to hear and see the still shot from Brian Rice making a brief cameo.
What a
on-screen
creep
as long as Bruce Pearl, but
yeah. Yeah, that the creeper 101 right there from Brian Rice. Credit to him.
And he totally.
Shout out. Yeah.
I know he said he was shifting his weight because they had been standing there for a long time. He was definitely getting that face shot on camera.
Was he at Brian C. Rice on Twitter? Is that right?
That is right.
Brian Creeper Rice. That all makes sense. All right, John. So National Wine Day, top five favorite beverages.
Boy, this was tough. When I thought, gosh, can I fill out five? And then it was like, oh, yeah, you can do that. And so I'm actually going to start with those that didn't make the top five. And it's not like I like these together, but I do like them individually. Love beer, wine, scotchy scotch. Tomato
down
juice.
Down to your belly?
Yeah. Tomato juice. They did not make the top five, but I enjoy them all immensely. At number five, I'll go with a margarita. At number four, Gatorade. Number three, tea. Number two, I'm going to go soda, but the type of soda that I like is either root beer, Fresca. How about a Fresca?
How about a Fresca?
Or ginger ale. And then number one, water. Because I live dangerously.
Well, those golden pipes, they're the moneymaker.
Got to keep them hydrated.
Heather Harrington, top five beverages of choice.
Well, I have been called basic before, so my number five selection, LaCroix. You know I love a little flavor. If you want to get crazy, we can go with the Curatase. They're amazing. Love them. So number four is going to be a little half and half tea action. I do like to go 60-40. more unsweet than sweet, but that's sometimes hard to explain in the drive-thru window. Chick-fil-A always nails it, though. Number three is going to be wine for me. I did go in order of consumption. Number two is coffee. And number one, water.
John, are you a non-coffee drinker? Do you dabble?
I really don't.
Okay.
I love coffee-flavored ice cream, but yeah, not much of a coffee drinker.
Okay.
It's kind of a thing. In college, there was so much free coffee available that I really developed a problem with caffeine, and I decided I'm not going to do what my dad did, and that was spend Sunday mornings with that caffeine headache. So I just said, nope, we're not doing that. So I do get some caffeine, just not coffee.
I still recall starting out my coffee consumption. It was at the hands of the late Ron Cantwell, our friend Haas.
Oh, yeah.
And he's a big coffee drinker. He said, have some of this, have some Joe. And I had some. He said, you're going to have a lot more. And he was right. So that'll be higher on the list. You know what? I truly like a seltzer from now and then. So,
are you basic too?
It's into the repertoire. Every couple of months, I'll have one.
Is there ever any confusion that you want seltzer and they bring you salsa?
You know why I like to order a seltzer? Because they like to say salsa. I've got beer number four, tea, green variety, most often number three. Although, in the evenings, I've started working in a little chamomile.
Oh, man, living dangerously.
The decaf variety, yeah. Wild times in the Ward House, I tell you that much.
It's party
That's
time.
Right. That's
YOLO.
Right. Owen and I just sitting back and enjoying some chamomile and enjoying some books at the same time. Coffee number two and water number one. I look forward to coffee more, but I drink a lot more water along the way. Got to stay hydrated.
And I will say this. Heather mentions the beverage that I probably drink as much as anything, and that would be the half and half, which I love Arnold Palmer's, but thanks to Chick-fil-A and the great service they have, I go with the diet lemonade and unsweet tea, and that is wonderful.
Oh, there
yeah.
You go.
Very good. Strong choice.
That's the Power Pole. It's driven by Ted Russell Ford, Kingston Pike, Parkside Drive. A day where maybe you don't want to walk around the lot, you can shop online, tedrussellford.net. Go down to Parkside. They've got a huge showroom. They'll drive it into the showroom for you. You can check it out under a roof. Very convenient. Ted Russell Ford, Lincoln. What's coming up next on Sports Talk?
We've got a lot coming your way today. It's an accelerated program because Tennessee basketball plays at 6:30, so the show ends at 6. But we look forward to bringing you some post-game reaction from the Tennessee players after the loss at South Carolina. With a look ahead to tonight's matchup with Vanderbilt, we'll have comments from Rick Barnes. We also look forward to being joined by sports attorney Dan Lust. He's going to talk about what he feels is the pending litigation between Mason Rudolph and Myles Garrett. So we're going to talk to him about that at 4:05.
That's quite a story, yeah.
Scott Holtzman just won his biggest fight.
Hot sauce.
He's going to join us at 4:35. At 5:05, we'll talk Tennessee, SEC, and college hoops with Mark Pankratz. And we'll also have a practice report with Eric Kane. All that between 3 and 6 today on Sports Talk.
Also, an honorable mention shout-out to Milk.
Oh, Milk? Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of I've got some lactose issues.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
Almond milk. Shout-out to there.
It's chocolate. Not really milk.
Yeah. Chocolate.
It's juice.
Post-workout.
It's juice.
Yeah.
Juice.
Owen slamming milk these days. So is
it gets expensive.
Yeah,
that's right. So he likes a little coffee in his milk.
It all goes to the same place. John, we appreciate it. Look forward to Sports Talk in just a few minutes.
Guys, have a great night.
We'll see you tomorrow at noon on Sports 180 on the Sports Animal.